All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Information Docking Test. Quick roll call, and I know we're all excited to dive into that. So, Andrew Prescott.
Present.
Michael Adcock. Not yet. Stephen Lane.
Just arrived, sorry.
Thank you. Cheryl Turney.
Cheryl's here. Okay. Cheryl's here.
Denise Webb. I know that Sasha is on, Erin Mary. I know that Erin is on, Valerie Gray.
I'm here.
Great. I know that Anil is on, Cynthia Fisher.
Yep.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. John Kansky.
Here.
Perfect. And Denny McComb. Okay. Andy, I will turn it over to you to get us started.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thank you for taking some time out of your Friday. Happy Friday to one and all. The main focus of today's meeting is for us to start considering through our comments around TEFCA, or TEF, however you want to refer to it, the framework which was released recently, the last couple of weeks, and that we had initially got a holding statement back from us in our feedback to our recommendations to ONC, and now that it's out, it's our responsibility to consider it and pass back any commentary that we wish to. So I know that we've all read it and we've all thought about where we should comment, where we want to not comment. I'm going to open the floor to see if anybody wants to make any initial kind of comments around it, and we'll take it from there. Floor's open.
Can I ask an orienting question? Sorry, this is Stephen Lane.
Of course you can,
Stephen. This is the Information Blocking Task Force. I am under the impression that ONC may be standing up a second TEFCA task force. Can I just understand from the ONC perspective, sort of what is the charge to this task force vis-a-vis TEFCA, and whether or not other task forces will be asked the same question, or there will be another task force to dive deeper into this? I'm just trying to understand where we're at here.
Yeah. Hey, Stephen. This is Mark. It's a good question. So you're right. There is a separate TEFCA or TEF and Common Agreement task force. I believe it's starting up possibly next week. Arian might be able to give some more information on that. I think he's the chair. But as far as what the charge is for you all here, there's two requests for information that relate to information blocking that have to do with TEFCA. One is regarding the exceptions, whether we should consider an additional exception for practices that relate to being compliant with the Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement. And then also in the assurances, whether participating in TEFCA should be a requirement for some developers to show that they are, to provide assurances that they are not information blocking. So those are the two requests for information that are on pages 165 and 497 of the Word document, the Word version of the proposed rule. That is kind of the focus, but I think more generally, like Andy said, we're interested in if you have other thoughts as well.
Thank you.
So John Kansky and I are the co-chairs of the TEFCA task force, and I agree that the information blocking, so we're trying really hard in the TEFCA task force to stay away from information blocking things like definition of HIE, HIN, et cetera. I think, as was pointed out, the areas of overlap are the dependency on the TEFCA and the proposed exceptions.
Does anyone else have any questions for ONC about this, or should we just open up the comment, like Andy said?
Okay, let's open up. So, does anybody want to take the first salvo around thinking this through this?
I'll bite.
I was hoping so.
Yeah. So I think as a task force, we should maintain our position that having a so the position that I think we've taken so far is that having an affirmative set of obligations for actors to conform to. That could be deemed that provide the effect of the moral effect of a safe harbor would be very useful because it would drive actors in the direction of setting up trusted exchange, setting up appropriate standards, and complying with the TEFCA. Capabilities. Now, I still think we need to debate in the TEFCA task force and get a final TEFCA rule. So I'm not sure that the publication of the TEFCA 2 solves all of our existential issues about knowing whether the TEFCA is or isn't the appropriate mechanism for a safe harbor. So I just think it would be better for us to stand where we are, which is to say, yes, we believe that having an affirmative set of obligations that have the effect of driving substantial interoperability would be useful.
Would it be fair to say, Arian, that if we make a statement from this task force that we believe TEFCA should be that safe harbor, or if we do not make that statement, that we think TEFCA should be that safe harbor, which is in itself a statement through not saying that would be a useful thing for us to do.
Yeah, I'm suggesting a slightly different stance, which is to say that having a safe harbor is a good thing and stay somewhat agnostic as to whether TEFCA, as proposed, is or isn't the safe harbor. That may be just a little too hair-splitting for folks, but...
No, I think that's fine. But should we be trying to say that TEFCA should be the safe harbor and it needs to be... we believe there are, from our initial reading of TEFCA, further refinement required to make it that safe harbor, or do we want to stand back from that?
I'd stand back from that just because I think that's the mandate of the TEFCA task force.
It might be useful, and this is Sasha, I think I favor Arian's proposal overall. If we wanted to identify characteristics of a safe harbor type approach, that might be consistent with this task force's purview, right? If we said we favor a type of approach that offers a proactive way to demonstrate that a particular actor has not been information blocking, and such an approach would have the following characteristics. I think we could certainly elaborate if there's consensus among the group on what some of those pieces would look like. But I would also, I think, disinclined to specifically identify the trusted exchange framework at this point, particularly just because it seems problematic to identify something that's still so much in flux. If the trusted exchange framework in its final incarnation meets the characteristics of a safe harbor that we identify as being desirable in this framework, that would be one alternative. But there might be other things that would meet the same characteristics that exist or emerge in the future. And I don't know that our intention is to eliminate that.
If I can jump in, this is Michael Lipinski with ONC. Can you all hear me?
We can, Michael.
Hey, great. And so obviously it's an RFI to inform future rulemaking, and I think you guys are raising good points. You don't have anything solid to know exactly what the final provisions of the agreement would be in the flow downs. However, maybe here's some things like you think about. for example, right now the proposed exceptions are on like reasonably cost incurred, security, as long as it's tailored to a particular security, identified security risk. So just to try to, you know, maybe what we didn't say in TEFCA, for example, what the fees were going to be, the QHINs would charge and so forth. So maybe those fees, whatever they end up being, aren't necessarily consistent with the exception we've already provided with that, you know, depending on how it gets finalized, the reasonably cost incurred or the security requirements may be such that, you know, maybe they wouldn't meet the security exception. So those are like some of the things that, you know, I'm thinking about now as to whether or not, you know, there would should be a TEFCA exception. And then there's also, as you guys were talking about, policy reasons why such an exception would exist, right? If you wanted to promote participation in it and things of that nature. So those are just some of the things. I understand it's still very abstract, even with a second draft, but hopefully those will give you guys who have experience in exchange and so forth some ideas of what we should be thinking about when we come forth with possibly a proposal in the future related to an exception.
Andy,
thanks, Michael.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm not viewing on the screen yet, so I can't see if people got raised hands. I will be in 5 minutes.
I didn't
time.
Bother.
go ahead.
Sorry if I'm cutting in front of somebody. So the information blocking regulation is to prevent information blocking through regulation, and TEFCA regulation is to establish a national interoperability ecosystem. So I have a comment and a question. The comment is that I'm uncomfortable with and willing to say I'm not in favor of establishing TEFCA as a safe harbor in information blocking for the sole purpose of incenting people to participate in this future ecosystem. And I imagine many people would be uncomfortable with that because that's not the purpose of the information blocking regulation. That said, the conceptual question is the idea behind creating a, if you participate in TEF, then you're obviously not intro blocking exception, is the concept behind that that any organization participating in TEFCA obviously isn't information blocking, or is it not quite that direct? Because if you can be in TEF and still info block, then why would we make that connection?
Yeah, and John, just to tag on to that, this is Stephen Lane. I fully agree with what you just said. They do seem a little disjointed. You know, I absolutely believe that people could participate in TEF and still information block in other parts of their business. So I do generally like the idea of incentivizing people to participate in the TEFCA if and when it exists, but this does seem like an odd vehicle to use it. And the idea of a safe harbor, you know, we've spent so much time looking at the individual exceptions. I don't quite get the value of a get out of jail free card over and above or separate from the exceptions that we've reviewed.
Well, I might jump in
real quick.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you want to jump in, Mike?
Sure. I just so it's not really a proposal, right? It's just an RFI, right? But said what we were considering in a future rulemaking was a narrow exception. So it was for complying with the requirements of the common agreement. So it wasn't broad as I think some might think. And I think that's fair to think about that, right? Because maybe we had it wrong. It doesn't sound like it based on what I'm hearing from you guys, but that it should be a broader exception. That wasn't what we were thinking about when we put in here a request for comment. We were saying if it was specific, compliant with the common agreement terms, that term would not be, you know, like they couldn't allege, oh, you're charging what and such fees. And they're like, well, that's the fees I'm allowed to charge, you know, with the common agreement. So therefore, I can't be an info blocker is what we're talking about. Not any actions of somebody participating in, you know, the trust exchange framework.
I think it might be worthwhile.
Cynthia, I'm sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'm traveling, so I can't raise my hand on the screen. This is Cynthia Fisher, and I support what Steve and John were saying about deep, deep concern about a safe harbor, because there are lots of other ways that one can information block, and having a safe harbor just for participation in TESCA is a very alarming and disconcerting, just from a patient perspective and a physician caregiver perspective as well.
So we obviously have two very distinct views coming from our task force. And I believe that we would be missing our charge if we didn't comment and at least articulate those two distinct opinions. And if we can come to a majority decision on one way or the other as our recommendation, that would be good too. But I definitely think we have two very distinct views. Has any other member got any other comment?
Hey, this is Arian. I think. Go ahead, Anil. Sorry, point of process, have my hand raised.
I do too, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Who was there, so I'll quickly,
I'm just logging in. Okay, hang on.
Okay. So I think we have to make sure we don't do this backwards. Instead of creating an environment where a common agreement could inadvertently allow for information blocking and someone could use that as an exception, why not make comments from this task force saying that the common agreement needs to reinforce the principles of preventing information blocking in the common agreement itself? So if we're going to comment on this from the perspective of whether there should be an exception, then I think we should do it in the right direction. Otherwise, I think for all the reasons that were articulated, we're going to have a situation where people might have a silly common agreement set of requirements and say, well, I'm part of the TEFCA. I can't be information blocking. And instead, we should say that the common agreements should align with what we're proposing promoting sharing and not information blocking. Let's make sure it goes in the right direction.
And Anil, in saying that, and I can see everyone's hands raised, hang on a second. In saying that, are you suggesting that we should go further and say that TEFCA, participating in TEFCA is not a safe harbor, does not automatically mean you are not information blocking, but the TEFCA should align with the principles of information blocking that we've gone through there?
Well, yeah, I think so, because okay. In other parts of our discourse, we've talked about how the agreements that are signed have to promote best practices and prevent some of these information blocking practices. And so I can't imagine why we would not also say the same thing about this, is that we're not going to give a safe harbor. Instead, we're going to say the common agreements need to be aligned.
Okay, thanks. Arian, you're next.
So I think it might be useful or helpful to look at what I wrote as the recommendation, which clearly we haven't reviewed yet. But I think try to get some of these nuances in. So number one is, you know, we don't want a blanket exception for participating in the TEFCA, understanding that there are other practices that could be problematic over and above participating in the TEFCA. Number two is a TEFCA that addresses the requirements of information blocking would be highly desirable and an affirmative means for addressing those information blocking requirements would be highly desirable. So, I think the draft recommendations address some of the concerns that have been raised. Now, it's not clear to me that the TEFCA TEFCA 2 as it stands addresses all of the information blocking needs and requirements. So ideally there would be a single reasonable way, not a single mandated way, but a single reasonable way to offer data via API to patients, providers, and other actors for permissible purposes. in the context of a trust framework that addressed security and privacy considerations. So anyway, I think it might be useful just to look at what the draft looks like right now and to see whether we agree or disagree with the draft as it's currently framed.
So, Darian, it's coming up on screen right now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We're pulling it up.
While we're bringing that up, Stephen, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I want to point out that we've been talking about this in two different ways. The folks from the ONC keep saying compliance with the terms of the common agreement or compliance with, you know, the principles of the trusted exchange framework, as opposed to being a signed participant in the TEF and or the CA. And I think we have to be very clear, you know, if this is about trying to get people to do the right thing, then we would say if you're complying with the terms, that's good enough. If we're talking about using this as a carrot to get people to be TEFCA participants, then we have to say that. And I think, again, this is a philosophical question. Again, a part of me says, yeah, you know, if we set up TEFCA, we want people to participate, and we want to put in carrots that say, you know, if you sign here on the dotted line, you're going to get something back in return. But a part of me really finds that inappropriate, you know, and wants to stand on principle and say that it's just compliance with the terms that would be important. But I think we have to differentiate where we're, how we're going to slice this.
Thanks, Stephen. You can lower your hand there. Okay, so we do have this dichotomy of view. Has anybody else got anything, any other thoughts around this?
Well, I think the first question is, do we believe in creating a safe harbor? I don't think it's a pure dichotomy. You know, we have to answer that question first, and then we have to say, if we believe in creating a safe harbor, what are the specifics of that?
So that's a good point. Let's start with that. I'm happy to do that. So should we be seeking to create a safe harbor that prevents or provides an assurance that you will not be implicating the information blocking rules?
Hey, I think it would be useful to read the draft that I proposed, because I deliberately didn't use the term safe harbor. I used the term affirmative set of obligations that would be deemed in the presence of, other negative behavior to be in compliance with the information blocking requirements.
Okay, so let's scroll down a bit in the document.
And I'm happy to explain what I view as the difference between those two. So what I'm asserting is that
Does he document it? Because we seem to be struggling to find it.
It was in the TEF section. Maybe it got whacked, or... Huh. Can you go up a little bit? Wasn't there?
No.
Do you remember any keyword, Darian, that maybe we could search for? Maybe it's in a different section, perhaps?
No. It's possible that it was...
You created it into... Or you might have put it into the Workgroup 2 document post us moving to the consolidated document.
Oh, that's also quite possible.
Yeah, Catherine, can you bring up the exclusive Workgroup 2 document, please?
That's, in fact, quite likely.
Or could you just go and look on Twitter? Has that got it all?
No, unfortunately.
Oh, that means you've got something to debate.
So maybe I can just frame up what my position is.
Frame it up while Catherine's bringing it up. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just agreement or disagreement. So my position is that there is a lot for actors to comply with respect to information blocking. If you read CURES and if you look at the NPRM, they need to respond to any reasonable request for a permissible purpose that isn't infeasible, you know, with respect to this, the seven exceptions. And there's a lot of uncertainty about how to address all of the requirements for information blocking. There is at least a reasonable position that if I stand up an API, make it available to patients, providers, and other actors for the purposes of access to data, and I comply with reasonable public-private endorsed terms, that that action, in the absence of other specific blocking behavior, should be reasonably deemed to be compliant with information blocking. So, you know, in this hypothetical, if I stand up an API gateway that offers an API to the patient that includes, yeah, there we go. Look, ha ha.
It's good. I'm reading it.
Yeah, can whoever's on the screen scroll down a little bit? Because the actual...
No,
yeah,
that's what we've got.
Go
that's
back.
It. Go back up.
What?
Go back up. Short but sweet, hopefully. A little up right
there.
Task force recommends, or in this case, the HITACH recommends that ONC create an affirmative set of obligations that we presume to address information blocking requirements. Those obligations that include common technical requirements, e.g. standing up at a Firebase API gateway that provides access to totality of patient record, were not otherwise prohibited, implementing patient matching and linking and making data accessible for permissible purposes with a common policy framework. So,
okay. So, Aaron, I must confess, I'm slightly challenged by this because it seems to be looking at the for want of a better term, I'll just keep using safe harbor. If I meet these obligations, then I'm not implicating the information blocking rules from a particular position of a certain actor. And it seems to be a subset of the intent of CURES. And I'm not sure that we'd want to put the onus upon a set of obligations that would meet the intent of CURES when we have the regulations and CURES itself that you need to conform to. Am I making sense?
Yeah, I think you are, and I agree. Again, I think it comes back to the idea of as much as we want to incentivize this behavior, and you spelled it out very nicely, we want everyone to do this. That just doesn't mean that they're not information blocking somewhere else in their business and behavior.
I completely agree with that. This is more about presumption in the absence of other, and maybe I should have written those words, but I think it's a good thing to have an affirmative set of obligations that create a presumption of compliance in the absence of other negative behavior. So it's not a safe harbor in the sense that if I do X, Y, and Z, then nobody can ever come after me. But it's a quasi-safe harbor or moral equivalent of a safe harbor that says if I do X, Y, and Z, and you know clearly we need to debate what X, Y, and Z is, and I don't think we need to debate. I think the TEPCA task force needs to debate that. But if I do X, Y, and Z, then if I do X, Y, and Z in good faith, I should be addressing all of the requirements of information blocking. Let me put it this way. There should be a TEF such that if I do X, Y, and Z in good faith, I am addressing all my obligations and information blocking. And if there isn't a TEF such that if I do X, Y, and Z in good faith, then I'm addressing my, then why do we have a TEF? To put it, to,
and
to
that,
kind of
and that's a very good question.
Negative.
Yes, that's a very good question, because we could inadvertently here create, you know, three tiers of bureaucracy, which doesn't seem to be the intent of what we should be doing either with simplification. You know, why would we have the information blocking regulations if actually we're saying, well, comply with TEF and you're complying with the with CURES?
Well, I think I'm putting it the other way around. I'm saying if TEF isn't the easy button to comply with CURES, then what's why do we have a TEF?
I think that's a very good question. Well, because CURES mandates a TEF. And that's why we have a TEF, because CURES asked for one. But is CURES implying that a TEF demonstrates the appropriate behaviors that CURES is trying to create?
Can I just jump in real quick, Mike Lipinski with ONC?
Just
to give you a little technical distinction between the between like info blocking and TEFCA. So TEFCA is, you know, as Congress, as you guys were alluding to, required it, but it was to connect networks, right? Disparate networks. It was it's going to give providers an opportunity to query across networks, even push information potentially across networks. Versus you think of just without it.
Michael, you're breaking up. Come back to us.
Let me see. I try something here. See if I can close.
You're back to us now. Come on.
Okay. All right. So I guess to talk a little bit about the difference between like the landscape of just info blocking in place with APIs, right? So with that, depending on how it scales and how you're trying to get the information, there may be some entities out there that will be able to, you know, establish connections with all endpoints and pull the information for you if you made a request. But with TEFCA and what Congress was looking for is to bring all the networks together. And so what you could do then is, through the QHINs, what we're hoping for is you can query them all, right, to see if your information's out there. And it hopefully that'll be an efficiency for both providers and patients. The potential to push, right? So there is some technical differences between, you know, a landscape without TEFCA and just info blocking, and a landscape where you have both TEFCA and info blocking. Just wanted to call that out.
Thanks for that. John Cansey has patiently had his hand raised. John.
Yeah, actually, what was just said was extremely helpful, because I again see and these words might be slightly offensive to some, but I think that TEF it was created somewhat echoing what I just heard to create a perceived market failure in establishing sufficient interoperability. Meanwhile, information blocking is perceived as a problematic behavior that exists in the industry. So I guess I saw those things as fairly separate. Related,
thanks,
sure,
John.
But separate.
Arian?
Regardless of what Congress may or may not have intended the TEF to do, I don't see any objection to this notion. Sorry, I don't see that as being a reason not to implement the proposal that's outlined here, which is an affirmative set of obligations that we presume to address information blocking requirements. Or put another way, if a provider or an EHR vendor don't have a playbook to write to, then they're in the position. So, Stephen, I'll pick on you. If CPMC doesn't have a clear playbook to play by, then you're in a position where, I don't know, Oakland Family Practice can complain to CPMC about information blocking behavior, and you don't, there's no clear grounds that you could say, I did X, Y, and Z, and therefore I'm not an information blocker. All you can do is to say, well, my behavior conforms to exception, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7, which is a very different kind of defense to the charge. And this is not by way of trying to give providers or EHR vendors a free pass or an out card. It is saying that it would be a good thing, and maybe the task force disagrees that it would be a good thing, but it is saying it would be a good thing if there were a set of affirmative obligations that in the absence of other considerations, offers all of the things that CURES want to offer, the totality information for all permissible purposes, addressing security and privacy with a reasonable fee structure.
So it's not, quite a presumption of innocence.
It's not quite a presumption of innocence. That's right.
Yeah, thank you. I was just getting kind of excited because I'm really seeing the wisdom of what Ariane is suggesting, and the nuance for the reason that I think this gets to a lot of discussion we had on our work groups in terms of the implementability and understandability of the regulation. And I think if there were a set of, hey, by the way, read the regulation, don't break any of these rules, but if you do these things, you're probably in good shape, would be extremely helpful to the industry trying to comply with the regulation.
Okay, because I am worried that it might be a nuance too far, and we need to be a bit more deliberate and explicit, because I'm not necessarily hearing that there is consensus across the task force at the moment for this recommendation. Although Mr. Kansky does appear to be lauding the nuance in here, I'm not sure that's shared. I'll be like to hear from other members of the task force here. Please, go ahead, Cynthia.
Hi, it's Denise, and I can't raise my hand because I'm just on the phone at the moment. So as I'm listening to this, and I was just reading last night the section in the preamble about the TEFCA RFI, which falls under information blocking, which falls under, I believe, assurances.
Yep, that's right.
Right.
There is one.
So as described by Arian, I think if we tie it into this idea that health IT developers who can who provide these services or act as a or a HIN that provides these services can then provide their use their participation in the TEFCA as an assurance that they're not going to take any actions that constitute information blocking or any other actions that might inhibit appropriate exchange access and use of EHI. But I do agree that that doesn't mean they couldn't still be information blockers. It more satisfies the assurance CMC. Is that the way I'm understanding, am I understanding this correctly?
I just want to jump in. Yeah, so you're right. Just to clarify, there is a request for information that's specific to the condition of certification for assurances, which applies only to developers in the program who have products certified in the program. And then there's also the request for information more broadly for information blocking that would apply, you know, an exception to everybody that information blocking would cover.
Okay, that helps. But I do know a health IT developer could also be a HIN as well, right? Potentially.
Yes. So, Arian, in your text, and I've started looking at this in the consolidated document where it now resides, are you intending this to be specifically targeted at technical requirements? Arian?
Hitting the mute button would be useful. So there is the TEF, which, as Michael says, really addresses intra-HIN requirements. What I'm asserting, and you know, it's a position, is that there should be for providers and for EHR vendors an easy button. And again, not a get out of jail free card, but a default mode that addresses all of the requirements. My presumption, just to outline the thinking, my presumption is that that easy mode would be generally addressed through certification, offering certified capabilities, and participating in a QHIN, and that the combination of those activities would create an affirmative set of obligations with the presumptions that I'm describing. And again, to Stephen's point, that doesn't mean that I'm not doing other nefarious activities or going around the you know, skirting the rules, et cetera. But it does at least give me a clear target to shoot for. And again, my presumption was the clear target would be the combination of certification and participation with the QHIN that also participates with the TEF.
Okay, thanks, Arian. Emil?
Yeah, I may be over reading this, but you know, when I think about affirmative obligations, it just sounds like another word for saying things are going to be mandatory. And I wonder whether we could accomplish the same thing what Arian is describing, which I think is a cool concept. But it sounds more like if you implement the following things in and create a best practice, then as an industry, you're less likely to be inadvertently information blocking. And I wonder whether we need to specifically spell that out, or simply say that those who are going to be in the business of implementing, or those who are going to be in the business of interpreting these things and saying to an actor, here's what you need to do, are in a better position to figure that out, as opposed to us trying to put it into a rule and say that we need to have OSC spell out a very specific set of obligations, because I think that's kind of backwards, at least in the way I'm reading it. I could be wrong here, but it just seems like we're simply just adding some more criteria to certification requirements, and I'm not sure what this accomplishes. Sounds like a best practice. Sounds like an implementation issue.
Okay, let's go. John, thanks, Aaron. Neil. John Kansky.
Yeah, I'm appreciating both sides of the argument, and I put something it helped me to type it out, so I put it in the comment section. Is it helpful? And we don't want to add more regulation per Anil's comment. We don't want to be prescriptive. That's my personal view. Is it helpful? The best practices was kind of helpful. Is it helpful to think of these affirmative actions as something an organization can do to demonstrate that they're clearly trying to comply with information blocking? This list of things would be things that, oh, if you're doing these things, obviously you're sharing information, you understand the spirit of the law, and you're aspiring to never information block. But so it's sort of a way to demonstrate that you're clearly not negligent. And I think, number one, why would we do that? Number one, it gives organizations that I think are going to be very fearful of this regulation, just in trying to understand it and know what they're supposed to do, some comfort. Number two is that if that list of affirmative practices was well chosen, we're going to move the industry forward in terms of sharing information.
Thanks, John. And as I look at this, I hear exactly what Anil was saying with the use of the term kind of obligations and affirmative set, etc. My perception, whether that's the intent, but my perception is that the framework is there to provide a way of enabling information sharing. And A framework, by definition, is not a series of mandates or necessarily obligations, but a contract for you to adhere to. And if I was a bad person, if I was wanting to make sure that I could information block whilst not implicating the information blocking rules, then the chance that I could leverage TEF and comply with the framework while still not enabling information sharing, I think there's an opportunity there without making TEF so prescriptive technically that it kind of becomes a mandate. And I'm not sure that's the intent of it. You know, it's an intent to enable organizations that wish to be good actors to be good actors, as opposed to provide a crutch for bad actors to be bad, I think. I'd welcome input from any of the other members of the task force as well, who've so far not said a lot on this. And also, you know, Stephen, you know, you were very vocal at the beginning, so...
I'll chime back in again. I mean, I'm interested. You know, I'm struck by John's dawning appreciation of this, and I think I also see some small value in this. I think, I do think it's small and soft, but you know, but it does encourage people to go to do the right thing. And to engage in a positive manner. I don't think it really provides them any protection or would be decisive, you know, in any charges of information blocking. So I don't think it does much harm, and it might do some good. So I can sign on to it given the narrow scope that's been defined.
John Kansky?
Yeah, just acknowledging that... this list would be, I don't want to be on the work group that has to come up with these lists of affirmative things, so it's conceptually much easier to talk about than it is to implement. And to Steve, so here's my question is, sort of in the absence of this, do others feel that this regulation is going to be somewhat easy to, if we don't have a safe harbor, we don't have a list of affirmative actions or affirmative behaviors, are others concerned, I am, that this is going to be a very difficult regulation to understand and comply with based on its structure of just naming exceptions?
This is Val, and I'm sorry I can't raise my hand. You know, I'm very concerned about the complexity of compliance and really sort of understanding all this. And I think about, like, some of the small practices and small neighborhoods. They need some help. And I think that what we're talking about here is a good balance. But I do think that we need to help people understand. And if we can spell out the kinds of things they need to do in order to show that, you know, they're intending to comply and they're providing and sharing all the information, I think it'd be extremely valuable. But I'm with John. I don't want to serve on that one.
Thanks, Al. Mr. Kansky, you're next in line, and there is a pile of people behind you. John, is your hand inappropriately raised?
Sorry, I was away from my mute button. Yes, I didn't mean for my hand to be raised.
Okay, Aaron Miri.
Okay, hey, all right. So to answer that question, do I think it's going to be difficult for organizations to comply, especially providers? I would say we all need to think back to the rollout of Meaningful Use Stage 1 and how it was a voluntary and then ratcheted up to mandatory over time, over years. I would say that one of two things is to happen, either the safe harbor out of the gate with the affirmative actions or a slow roll as to, hey, let's get everybody on the same page, answer any questions, partner together to make it happen. But, I mean, we all have had to go through meaningful use without any kind of safe harbor attached to it. We just did it over time. So there are ways to do this without having to have those other mechanisms in place. It just needs to be done pragmatically.
Thanks, Alan. Anil?
Yeah, I see both sides as well, and I struggle with the idea that and maybe I misunderstood what Arian where he wanted to sort of describe this particular requirement or this recommendation. You know, if it's not part of the regulatory text and we're not mandating it, and it's simply asking ONC to come up with an implementation guide, I think that's great. But what I worry about is trying to put regulation around mandatory steps. I think we have to be very careful that we not add burden. And it may seem like right now, sitting here, that we're making it simpler. But if we are too prescriptive, it might actually increase the burden as opposed to helping people have some degrees of freedom of how they want to do something as long as they prevent inappropriate behaviors that are spelled out. And with that balance, but I think we could accomplish what a lot of you are all saying by simply having a companion implementation guide or some sort of best practices that could help those struggling actors comply with these things. But I really worry about trying to put this in regulatory text and make
it. Thanks, Anil. And Anil, is your suggestion then that we provide that recommendation that TEF should be more along the lines of being an implementation guide than exactly what the language is that Arian is asking?
I think, first, I'm thinking out loud as I'm talking out loud as I'm thinking about this, but the first thing is, I think if you're going to come up with a series of affirmative behaviors or affirmative obligations, then it does need to be part of a implementation best practices type of guide, and not part of some safe harbor. Because I do think that it seems to me that's not the intent of what we were being asked to comment on. It was at least the way I read it, was if the participation in a common agreement would somehow give an actor the ability to use that as a exception for information blocking. And I think the answer there is, for all the reasons we've been discussing, the answer is no. Then the question is, should we as a committee recommend that ONC put together some series of affirmative obligations, as was called out, that will create an environment of safe harbor? And I think the answer there is no. I think if we all agree that these are the reasons why someone should be called out for information blocking, and we agree that it's going to be tough to implement this, then why not have an obligation of ONC to help with an implementation guide, as opposed to making the rules more complicated.
Okay, thanks, Anil. That's helpful. I think it focuses upon the ability of TEF compliance to be a affirmative attestation. I get where you're coming from. Mark, it might be helpful. Can you possibly give us a bit of elucidation from the ONC camp about the differences between, you know, what TEF's looking to achieve, what the regulations are looking to achieve, what the exceptions are looking to achieve, et cetera. Maybe a bit more, shed some more light from your cave on that.
Yeah, so maybe I'll try to focus us in, since I know that we're kind of, we have about 20 minutes left. And the focus, I want to kind of point the group in, and I think this is great discussion and really helpful to hear these thoughts, is that we have these two RFIs. And so on the screen right now, we have the request for information regarding assurances. So, you know, this is in the conditions of certification for assurances. So this is specific to health IT developers who have products certified under the program. And would right here at the bottom, we say, we request comment as to whether certain health IT developers should be required to participate in the TEFCA as a means of providing assurances to their customers in ONC that they are, they are not taking actions that constitute information blocking or any other action that may inhibit the appropriate exchange, access, and use of EHI. And then we flag specific criteria here that have to do with accessing exchange of EHI. So I want to focus, you know, maybe some of the conversation on specifically that question. And then there's a second question that's in the information blocking section. Katie, if you're able to pull down to page 497 of the same document, That's where we have that. And that's, I think, more of what you're talking about in this discussion right now is whether there should be a broad exception in information blocking. But we do talk about that needs to be narrow. And let me pull my screen down to 497. Sorry. Give me one second here. I want to make sure I get the language right. All right. Hold on. PDFs are slow. I'm working off a separate document. Give me one second here. Okay. Sorry for the delay, folks. We say, sorry, let me just pull it up. So, okay, I'm having trouble with my PDF, but we say, can you search for narrowly, there's a, sorry, hold on one second. Basically, we say that we want to focus specifically on requirements of the TEFCA, and we're not going to, it's not going to be overly broad to stretch like beyond those specific requirements necessary to comply with a common agreement, and that would not qualify for the exception. So I guess I just want to make sure that we're focusing on these two separate, you know, requests for information in the discussion. So that's all I want to say, Andy. Is that clear to everybody?
It wasn't as clear as I'd hoped for, Mark.
Okay. So basically, I guess what I'm trying to clarify is there's a request for information in the assurances section of the conditions of certification where we're asking whether it should be a requirement for certification that certain developers participate in the TEFCA. And then we also have a separate request for information in the information blocking section where we're considering whether you know, complying with the common agreement narrowly framed such as the contract terms, policies, or other practices that are not strictly necessary to comply with the common agreement would not qualify for the exception, but that you would be exempt, you know, would be an exception to if you participated in, you know, certain requirements of the common agreement.
Okay, and that second RFI is what we've been discussing so far, what Arian has drafted text on.
Right.
And I must confess, and I want the task force to chip in at this point because I want to make sure that we are reflecting everybody's viewpoint. I think I'm hearing the sentiment from the task force that we don't believe that TEFCA, an attestation of compliance with TEFCA, should be a information blocking exception. That's what I'm hearing. And I'd like the task force to comment about whether that is what you're saying.
It should not be an exception.
Sorry.
Cheryl Turney.
That's what I'm hearing, and I agree with not adding anything more that would further complicate people's understanding in terms of, you know, what they need to do. I think the exceptions are exceptions, and that, you know, what is in TEFCA is the basis for how the exchange should occur. And unless there's something additional that we would need to add to an exception, I'm not sure that clarification is really required as part of this.
Okay, thanks, Cheryl. Arian?
I will defer to the wisdom of the task force. I will put out maybe two motivating statements. One is if you're worried about regulatory requirements, I'd be equally worried about what is or isn't information blocking getting settled through litigation. And through the threat of litigation, more than I would, if I were a compliance officer, I would prefer to have a clear set of obligations to comply with than have a set of exceptions, knowing that at some point those exceptions are going to get litigated. So that's number one. Number two, on more of the positive side, I do believe that having a positive set of obligations will drive industry in the right direction, because it will be the easiest, simplest way to get the compliance officer off your back, to offer an API to patients that meets certification requirements, to provide an API to providers and other actors that meet certification requirements, and to make data available for permissible purposes. And so on the one hand, I think if you're worried about regulatory overreach, I'd also worry about legislative obligations that are defined through litigation. And on the other hand, if you're worried about encouraging, not discouraging interoperability, never underestimate the power of a scared compliance officer to force organizations to do the right thing.
Thanks, Ariel. Do you think TEF as currently drafted covers every single aspect of information blocking regulation?
So I do not right now. I would state this a different way, which is that if we as an industry can't figure out, whether it's implementation guidance or others, a public-private framework that addresses the information blocking requirements, then we probably deserve the litigation that will be coming our way.
Thanks, Arian. Sasha, have you got any input contribution at this point?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about the two questions that are posed in the RFI. The first is whether it should be an obligation of certain certified modules and the developers of those modules to participate in the trusted exchange framework. And we haven't discussed that as extensively during today's conversation, though certainly some of our themes touch on it. I will propose that I don't think that would be an appropriate requirement for several reasons. First of all, I think it's challenging because the trusted exchange framework doesn't necessarily align in its current incarnation with the different modules that are proposed. But at a more fundamental level, I think the intent of CURES was to create a voluntary framework, and tying it to certification in that way doesn't seem to align with that voluntary nature of it. Regarding the question of whether establishing something that could be done proactively to show intent to not information block and, in fact, intent to information share, I am very supportive of that. I think about how entities, actors in the space would try to prove this. I don't want that to be settled via litigation, which I see as an expensive and undesirable option for the industry. I would prefer to see it be able to be shown to be encouraging the behaviors that we want in a proactive way. We struggle with that because of the construction of CURES, I think, and it's led us to this construction that has exceptions rather than just a list of desired behaviors and defining a lot of things in the negative, which does make it more challenging. It's harder to prove that something does not happen than it is to prove that something specifically did happen. And for that reason, I do think there's advantage to a construction that says if the certain things did happen, that is an advantage. It is a statement of good intent. It shows a positive behavior on the part of the actor. And it also gives us an opportunity in constructing that to discuss as an industry what those behaviors are proactively that we desire in a positive way rather than in a negative definitional way. And I'd go as far as to say I will be on that task force. I think the conversation in a non-litigation space as to what the behaviors that are desired are and how those would be defined and achieved across the industry is an important initiative. I agree with Arian that I don't think it's desirable to define that through litigation.
And we believe that TEF is the right place to prescribe those positive behaviors.
No, I don't necessarily think that the trusted exchange framework is a necessary place to do it. I think it could be one approach, If we come with a framework and an agreement that met the expectations of positive behavior that we came to from consensus, that might be it. It might be one part of it. I don't know that that is a requirement of my support for the idea of some sort of statement of positive behaviors, that it necessarily be the trusted exchange framework.
Okay, thanks, Asha. And so what role do you think the TEF should have?
I don't think, and I guess this maybe goes back to the previous conversation, I still think until we know what the trusted exchange framework is, it is still premature to specifically link it to information blocking in a particular way. It might be reasonable to say that there are certain things the TEF might be, which we would like to encourage in the vein of the conversation today in terms of saying we'd like to identify certain encouraged behaviors. But I don't think that we know enough about what the trusted exchange framework will evolve to be as a voluntary framework to specifically say that there's a link to information blocking.
Thanks, Asha. I'm just going to flip back through other members of the task force as well. So, John Kansky, given that conversation we just had, what do you think around, you know, almost staying mute at this juncture on the role of TEF?
I was just about to type into the comment box before you called on me that I could not have said it better than what Sasha just said. I was nodding my head to her entire comment, so just a bit of a cop-out, but I'm going to just agree with her.
Aaron, maybe?
I totally agree. This is Aaron. I think we've just got to go across this pragmatically. We don't want to add any additional further burden or complexity to this, but I agree with what Sasha said.
Okay, thanks, Aaron. You know, slightly concerning, Arian appears to have dropped from the call. Arian,
I have not dropped from the call. I am patiently being silent.
Okay, go ahead. You're next.
Deliberately being silent. So I just feel like there's a seed of an agreement here that's outlined by Sasha's comments. It's outlined by this discussion. If I pull the sense of the task force, I hear on the one hand a concern that we make this affirmative obligations a burdensome regulation. On the other, I think a concern that we define obligations through litigation, and nobody wants that either. There's something to the idea of affirmative obligations. I'm also not hearing that the task force believes that we have the defined set of affirmative obligations yet. And maybe that suggests that the task force recommendation to ONC is to work with industry to create a voluntary consensus set of those obligations.
I think that could well be the case, Aaron. I think I'm hearing a bit more than that as well, that there's a certain level of sentiment as to what TEF is and what TEF is not in relation to implication of information blocking. And I wonder whether actually we should try and write down that very small list of what TEF is and what TEF isn't, and kind of that's almost the basis of a recommendation upwards to our lords and masters about saying, you know, this is kind of the contextualization of TEF as far as we're concerned, what it should be. How about that?
So I agree with that. I will repeat my comment that if the combination, if we have ONC with a set of certification requirements and a set of trusted exchange framework requirements, and the combination of those doesn't address information blocking, that's a really good sign that we actually have unnecessary regulatory burden. We're asking for a whole bunch of compliance activities, and yet we're not actually getting the good that we're looking for.
Thanks, Arian. That's very helpful. I think we are going to be leading heavily on the entire task force, I think, to try and get through the 100 words or something that describes our sentiment over the next few days. I'm going to take a cut at some of the wording, and then I'm going to hand it out to broader. Mike Adcock, have you got any contribution at this point? Because you've been quite quiet so far.
I'll take that.
Okay, well, I can see him on. I just can't hear him. Okay, it's fine. Let's just move to public comment at this point, please.
And operator, can we open the public line?
Yes, thank you. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And do we have any comments in the queue?
No comments at this time.
Okay.
We'll check back a few minutes before we adjourn. Andy?
No, thanks so much. Cynthia, there's been quite significant discussion as we've gone through the last sort of hour around this. And, you know, I think some really good discuss. It's not even like we're in two camps. There's actually a very swirling discourse that we're undertaking at the moment. Have you got anything else to add based upon some of the positions that have been discussed and moved? I'll take that silence as none. Okay, Denise?
Yes, I had to get my mute button off. I don't really have anything substantive to add. I appreciated what Sasha contributed and thought that she is on point on some of the things that we need to be concerned about.
Thanks, Denise. Any other public comments coming in on the line?
No comments at this time.
Okay, thanks. Emil Jane?
Yeah, so I just wanted to double back on something, and I want to make sure I didn't misunderstand. The question of litigation came up, and I think what I was hearing, and certainly I'm not an expert in this area, but what I heard Sasha and Arian both say is that if you had a list of affirmative obligations, that it reduces the risk of litigation. But my understanding is that we are still going to have these exceptions in play. There's still going to be areas for interpretation, and the complaint process is not being impacted by what we're saying here. So I just want to make sure that I'm not missing something, and I need to think about this some more, but what are we suggesting that if you had a list of things that you do that would somehow shield you from litigation? Is that what we're putting in here?
Let me put it this way. And again, I'm just imagining an API gateway that offered data via FHIR, both to patients and to providers and other actors for permissible uses. And if I were CPMC or University of Austin, or name your health system, or name your evil information blocking health IT vendor, and there was a complaint, I would at least be able to point to, hey, in every case where I got a request through the appropriate channel that had the appropriate trust enabled for it, I responded in good faith with the information that was desired, that the presumption would be, in the absence of other nefarious behaviors, that I was not in fact information blocking. There's a lot there. There's a lot of assumptions there. The assumption is that API provides access to the totality of information, that it's in a reasonable format. that the trust framework is sufficient for actors getting what they need. But I do very strongly believe that it would be helpful for industry to have a well-defined punch list of, I got to go do X, Y, and Z. And if I do X, Y, and Z, and I respond in good faith to every request that's being made to me, and I'm not throwing up chaff, and I'm not throwing up, well, HIPAA this, and, you know, blah, 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 that, that if somebody registers a complaint to OIG, OIG asks me, and I say, look, I've got this API gateway, I've got all the logs, I can demonstrate who made the request and who made the response, that, yeah, generally OIG would say, okay.
This is Cynthia. I'm traveling. Again, it's hard for me to raise my hand, but I just get really concerned for patients and for physicians getting access. And I can use an example of a direct primary care physician that just couldn't, his electronic system, the major hospital system in the city would not share back and forth. So it's very difficult to make his patient population be able to get appropriate information. A lot of hurdles, a lot of information blocking. My concern is that we could provide an out, and I just think if you do the right thing and you make it open and you deliver, you could have standards, but it doesn't release anybody on accountability, because there are all sorts of ways to provide protectionism here and nuance, and I don't think that's our job as our committee. I think our committee is to deliver patients and other providers getting full access to necessary information to improve quality of care, appropriately diagnose, and appropriately address what Congress was so concerned about that has happened. And, you know, we see people being very concerned and entities being very concerned about EHR vendor blocking, as well as providers. And this is really, the accountability needs to be open and able to be enforced. And I just firmly believe that we would be doing the American public a disservice if we didn't go with that intention.
So I think, Cynthia, to paraphrase what you're saying, your concern is that we inadvertently create a screen for actors to hide behind.
Well, it's not our role. Our role is to make sure that the information is delivered, and I am concerned that we're allowing a tool, and we're trying to do protectionism, and we're trying to give a safe harbor to actors that have caused this very problem, and why we're spending all these hours trying to deliver access to the American public. So I think any way we try to do a screen, to your point, is problematic. So
got it. Thank you. Thank you for that. Have we got any public comments coming in on the line?
No comments at this time.
Thank you. And any other members of the task force? Any closing comments? Okay, so Mike and myself, probably we're going to, Arian and Cynthia, probably run this past you as well. Just with that punch list, to rephrase, of what we believe the TEF should be and shouldn't be with respond to information blocking, and get that out to the broader task force for consideration and deliberation. Meanwhile, I'm sure many people, look forward with bated breath to Messrs. Malik and Kansky in the chair of the TEF task force next week.
We are absolutely excited. We cannot express our degree of passionate excitement.
I can feel it radiating from Nashville and Indianapolis in equal measure.
Oakland, Emeryville.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Has anyone got any other comments as we close?
This is Denise. I was just saying thank you to John for stepping up to fill my co-chair position since I'll be out of the country. Appreciate him
that. I'll get you back later.
I know you will.
Edward, thank you ever so much for your time. Look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, all.
Bye-bye.